Okay, all set up here now. We had some, well, if not technical difficulties, at least some shuffling to do with the computer and stuff, but all good now. Again, warm welcome to all of you. It's going to be our fourth lecture at the Introduction to Corporate Communication, and we have a great pleasure to have our Professor Chiara Valentini, Head of Corporate Communication Discipline, giving you guys a lecture on harmony amidst discord, navigating stakeholder interests, polarization, and effective communication in corporate expanded responsibilities. A lot of words, yes. But I guess you will explain a little more detail when going through your lecture slides that what this is all about. So without any further ado, Chiara Valentini, welcome to have your presentation.
Thank you, Matthias. Hello, everyone. Nice to see many of you in classroom. Let me see if this technology works. And thanks for the intro. So I'm a professor of corporate communication and the head of the discipline in corporate communication here at GSPE. I don't do much teaching on the bachelor level, so that's maybe why you might haven't seen me around. I have a course on corporate reputation management. Maybe some of you I've already started that course, so maybe they will take it next year. And most of my teaching duty at a master level and doctoral level, because I'm responsible also for the corporate communication discipline at the doctoral level. I also have an adjunct positions in Italy, UL in Milan, where I teach corporate public affairs. And I'm engaged on very different kind of activities, actually with different associations, so try to keep up with the professionals and realities and what's going on in our world. And maybe a couple to mention, so some of my research deals with crisis and conflict, and that is an area which is obviously expanding because all sort of organizations face sooner or later some crisis, but I have been asked to join this think tank that was created in the U.S. a few years back, which tried to bridge with professionals, especially those working crisis, and academics on crisis communication. I'm also active with this R2WH Page Society. This is a very international association, or like one of my colleagues, I think you met Vilma Luomahao, likes to talk about the secret association. Nothing secret about R2WH Page. You can Google it and find it. It's an association for mostly senior manager and corporate communication officers. And the last 3-4 years have expanded, including academics, because the idea is, again, to bridge research with practice and have these dialogues, these discussions about, you know, how can research and the work we do here in the university can help professionals in handling the challenges they are facing. And then, of course, a number of other things among the others. So what is this lecture about with very difficult titles that I tried to thought about? Well, I thought that would be nice to delve a little bit about something you have discussed already and hopefully have some knowledge about, and that is about stakeholders and publics. Why are they important? And I would like to give you some of my reflections and trying to bridge also with what you have read or will read about this topic as a part of this course, because pretty much all the things we do in corporate communication start from very the basic ideas. Who are my stakeholders? Who are my publics? I can't plan communication or any kind of activities if I have no idea about these individuals or these organizations, institutions, entities. So I thought we start about talking about this and see what it means essentially and to be a stakeholder or a public to move into the complexity we are facing today. And I will share some insight also from the discussion I have with professionals. To start with these things, I want to start actually this lecture with a story. I think stories are wonderful for communicating, convey some meanings, some ideas. So when Matthias asked me to prepare this lecture, I thought, you know, why not ask our nice ChatGPT, so this large language model, maybe some of you have already used it, or I don't know if they will use it, to build a story for this lecture. So I asked ChatGPT, or prompted with some information about certain things I want to tell you, and ask to create a story. And I will share you a glimpse of the story that it created, because it was much longer, as an opening of this today discussion. Let's see. So I have print out the story because I can't turn around and read it. So allow me to read. You have also in the slides the text. So the story starts like that. Once upon a time, in the heart of a city, towering above its surrounding, stood the glimpsing headquarters of Solness Corporation. Solness, a symbol of success, hiding a darker truth. Inside, employees like Alice toiled endlessly, taped in a Solness machine. After 5 years, she has seen countless colleagues burning out. The worst came when Ben, a close co-worker, collapsed from exhaustion after weeks of grueling 17-hour shifts. His death was met with a cold corporate memo. No apologies, no responsibility. Outside the company, Solness boasted about its community impact. But the reality was starkly different. Polluted rivers from their factories, abandoned promises of affordable housing and profit funneled into executive pockets. Their public image was a facade. Behind it, they poisoned both workers and society. Fed up, Alice decided to act. She leaked documents expressing truth, how Solness exploited employees and neglected its support to social responsibility. The story exploded, and the corporation's pristine image shattered. Stock prices plummeted, and executives scrambled to save face. Alice, walking away from the corporate tower for the last time, felt lighter. By revealing the truth, she had reclaimed not just her own soul, but sparked hope for change in others. What is this story about? What do you think? This is a fictitious story, but it's actually based on facts and things that happened not long time ago. And actually, in some part of the world, we still face situations like this, where employees are working around the clock, where human rights conditions are, let's say, not respected, where organizations maximizing their profit. It's not actually so fictitious, you think about. Of course, maybe thinking here in Finland, where we have strong rights as a workers, as a citizen, and so on, it might feel like nice fake stories. But it actually is still valid in some part of the world. What is this story about? This story about brings into something that for decades we have been struggling when working organization, particularly in business organizations. Business organizations have been primarily focusing on economics interest, economics responsibility, and have disregarded what they thought were more social rights or social questions, thinking that that stuff is not the business things. It's the government who takes care of those things. It's the NGOs who take care of those things. But reality is much more complex today, as organization cannot live without the support. And this support, obviously, is not only a nice communication, a nice positioning of organization, is much more entangled in the corporate governance of organization, how organization strategically decide to be perceived, to move, to act, to invest, and to gain respect for the world community. When organizations started to grow this interest on stakeholders as a concept, it was a time also, perhaps your parents see more vivid these things, with a lot of societal activism and movement, green movement for women rights and things like that emerge around the world, particularly in Western society. And so the needs for corporation to take on this duty became essential. Given that this is quite important ideas that the organization needs to rely and think about their stakeholders in today's society, I want to dwell now a little bit more into this concept. And I want to start from your understanding in order to bridge with what we understand in the, let's say, in the literature or among the professional. So please take a few minutes, either with a link or with a QR code if you have a phone, and get into this page and type just a few words of your understanding of who is a stakeholder. I'll give you a couple of minutes and then we'll show it here on the screen. We can share afterwards this result with you guys, no worries. We can make a PDF, right, Matthias, and then share it with the Moodles. Okay, let's look at some thoughts. Customers, employees, shareholders, investors, anyone with some type of interest in the company, fans, haters, rebels, anyone with interest, anyone, okay, employees, customers, supporter, partners, investors. Very good. Those who have some relationship with a company. Okay, this is not related. Okay, thank you, guys. Yes, these are stakeholders. Or let's say those we think they are the main stakeholders today. When we talk about the story of a soulless corporation and the ideas that organization, especially business organization, had a duty, economic duty, responsibility. We often refer to this guy who is now there, but has been a milestone in the field of stakeholder management theory and in his thinking, economic thinking of the role of stakeholders in organization. Today he's often criticized because his obviously understanding was very narrow. For him, the only stakeholders that organization, business organization, should take care of are shareholders, or in other words, for investors or financiers, are all those kind of groups of individuals or institutional entity whose main purpose is investors or put cash and finances into companies. So from his point of view, the only duty for in Western capitalist society of businesses is to create and maximizing profit for the shareholders. So all the sort of activities organizations should focus should have as that as a main objective. Now, if you think about carefully about that, that makes the activities of an organization, a business organization, very narrow and very also directed to with certain approach and way of thinking. His understanding was obviously not gaining much of traction later on when organization faced multiple crises, when organization faced loss of public face, when maybe later on also governmental authorities start to regulate him, because the problem also with not behaving according to certain kind of social norms is that you might get the legislator, the politician, essentially deciding to regulate your activity even more tighter to control business behavior. So the a new thinking, a new line of thinking on stakeholder management was proposed by this other guy who is still alive. He's now emeritus professor at Dermer School of Business in Virginia in the U.S. and is the father of the modern stakeholder theory, so Edward Freeman. Once you might encounter quite a number of reading and ideas about it and a lot of scholars, not just in corporate communication, refer to him. For him, the stakeholder or the duty of the business organization is to contribute into value creation, create value not just for the shareholders or the investors, but for a broad set of stakeholders. And doing these values means also to be sustainable in a certain way, because the stakeholder network is much bigger than, for instance, the customers, the employees, the consumers, or the suppliers. Something that perhaps we could compare from your understanding definition. Now, I think most of you who posted about this type of stakeholder. You mentioned this kind of stakeholder because this is what we think, you know, normally when we think about organization and business and services, we think about their consumer, their customers, their supplier, the employee, and so on. But the reality is much more complex, because while we could say modern organization all take care of those classical or more very distinctive relationships, so those who have a contractual relationship with the companies, not every organization is looking, monitoring, or taking care of this other set of stakeholders, what we call loose relationships. Today, the most critical situation comes actually with this kind of stakeholder more than the rest. Of course, we can have some unhappy consumer who complain online, say, oh, this is crap product or something. Or we might have a supplier, or for whatever reason, stop sending the material, so it doesn't fulfill the contractual relationship there. Or we have employees who strike because of some work condition. But those are very isolated, very clear signs of stress the organization can forecast and plan ahead. So I would say those are situations that are manageable when organizations understand the interest and the stakes of those. These are a bit more complex because organizations don't have contractual relationship with them. They don't necessarily sell them anything. Maybe some organization might sell their product to the government or public sector organizations. But normally, the relationship is more symbolic. And that is why these organizations have less, resources to wonder what are they thinking, why are they acting the way they're acting. But these organizations, so this entity, have a very important role today. Even environment that sometimes is considered obscure, entity, I mean, what is the environment here? I mean, is it the how much forest we have, or what is their quality, or what is there? It's very vague. Today drives a lot of business organizations' decision. In fact, the word sustainability is there everywhere. If you Google on the website of this organization, it's part of their business strategies to think about their impact to the environment, among the other things about sustainability. Now, why I want to dig into more this concept of stakeholder is something that you might not have thought about, but we sometimes like to call about different entity organizational stakeholder, but not all of them actually are stakeholder. And we should be careful for that, because as soon as we give them the title of stakeholder, we actually claiming them the right to complain, the right to ask things to organization, the right to be listened, the right to demand something. And obviously all these things cost money, resources, energy for organizations. So we should not label anyone that comes and talks about an organization as a claim, as a stakeholder. Therefore, we need to understand what it means to be a stakeholder. And the literature has been very clear. From a business organization point of view, we are interested only on those individuals who possess very scarce resources that we wanted, that they have a capacity to grant with all these resources to us, And then they have a value for us. This is from a business point of view, who is a stakeholder. If the individual, the organization, the entity doesn't have this quality, it's not really a stakeholder for an organization. It doesn't offer anything to the organization, activity, and things. Now, in your comment, you use the words interest, which is a nice word to think about the concept of stake, which is the first part of the word stakeholder. Remember, when we think about this stake or interest, we think about both tangible and intangible things. If you think, for example, you own a house, obviously it's a tangible material things that you own and has a value, which you can sell on the market and gain some money out of that. But an intangible things could be, for example, subscription to, I don't know, Elisa or some of these telecommunication companies for having internet and mobile. You don't really see the signals, right? You don't really see it, but it is there, and it still is a material stake, but is intangible in that sense. So when we think about a stake, we think both tangible and intangible, material and material. Now, out there are obviously some individuals, some entities that possess some of these stakes, these value things that are scarce. Let's think about the employees of a company. Of course, depends on the business of the company. They might look for a particular skill set. In fact, when you apply for a job, the first things they ask you, what do you know? What can you do? What are your skills? And this is the things they are looking. And these are the things you can offer, the capacity, the things you can offer that allowed you to be considered a stakeholder. However, there are also individuals or entities that don't possess, or let's say at the first instance, they don't possess the things that organization might look for at a certain point of time. These are stake seekers. Stake seekers are very interesting organization, entities, and that have perhaps not necessarily always a genuine interest in organization. I think some of you talk about hate holders. Hate holders can be considered also stake seekers in the sense that they are raising attention around organizations on issues and things that they don't like it or they disagree. And by do that, they seek to not just the attention of the public, of the citizen, but they seek to gain legitimacy. They seek to get some recognition, perhaps a compensation or something from the organization. So they are seeking the status that they miss some of the characteristics we talked about as fundamental. And then there are stake givers. This is also a very interesting concept because we do have seen that many other entity organizations are also willing to give the status, the resources to others that are sought by business organizations. NGOs, non-profit organizations, can be also stake givers, for instance, if they have know-how about a specific environmental conditions or situation, or they have access to certain things, they might become the intermediary between the business organization and those that they are looking for, gain this interest, these stakes. So now, based on this understanding, obviously, we do have different views of who are a business organization main stakeholders. So Freeman, as I mentioned, is one of the key scholars on this on this area of stakeholder theory. Define basically stakeholders as a group, individual, who is affected or affect an organization achievement of goals. What does it mean affecting? Affecting means that you produce some consequences that have a meaning, a value for others. If you are an employee, let's say, that runs a special machinery No one in the organization knows how to run that machine apart of you. And you get sick or you leave the job, the organization is highly affected. It cannot run the machine unless it finds someone else substituting you. So that specific employee is affecting the production, so the things that need to be done with that machine. And if the things that need to be done with that machine produce economic value, let's say money, profit, obviously, it's a loss for the company every single hour or days that this employee is off from work. However, we don't think about stakeholders only through the lenses of how can they do something to me as an organization. We also think how we can do something to stakeholders. Some of the things the organization do might have broader implications, and obviously those who have thought about, for example, considering the environment as a, one of the key organizational stakeholders, see this as a central. So any kind of business organization that produce any negative effects to the environment should be controlled or should be regulated or should have some processes to minimize the risk, the effects to the environment. And that comes of organizational responsibility to society. Some of the early thinking about stakeholder theory positions organizations as a central hub where different kind of groups of stakeholders are linked together. And this is where we comes the more problematic part is that today rarely we have such a situation. Of course, we can start thinking about what kind of organization is my organization, who are their main contract, which are the main contractual relationships, or who are the main stakeholders, and so on. But reality today is more looking like this, really messy, meaning the organization, the business, the firm is not at the center of the hub relationship, but it's one of the elements. And the other stakeholder don't need to interact with the company. Many times they don't even need to, the company themselves to get the knowledge, the things, the resources, or the things they care about it. And they can communicate one on another, interact with another. Now, when you think about these two different view, what does it mean for corporate communication? Well, if you think very simplistically that organization is in the center of the hub and has this set of stakeholders, you might create content information that is relevant for the competitor, for the media, the employees. You kind of segment or have targeted information packages for this. But reality is that today, these entities are not isolated. They talk to each other, they communicate, they share. They get the information also from other organizations, not just the firm itself. And therefore, this kind of strategy is not really working in today's landscape. We need to think in a complex manner how what we plan and communicate and act upon influence this different group of key stakeholders who possess the attributes, the quality we need for our organization, and how they can influence each other's. Now, another comment I want to get in touch with you is another comment that is related with stakeholder instead of publics. Perhaps you have seen this concept as well. Not sure if Cornelis used both publics or stakeholders concept, but they are not exactly the same, and there is a different nuances, things that need to be considered. So like before, I would like to ask you for a few minutes to type your ideas of what is a public, who is a public. Okay, let's open a little bit the discussion. Was it more difficult to write about publics than stakeholder? Or the same? It's just a curiosity, because I think the first one went very fast, and then I was wondering if this is a bit more difficult to think about, what is a public in that. So what I see in here, I see that some of you think about public as a more broader citizen kind of concept, with a country idea, so association with that. Some of you sees a public as also as a stakeholder, so someone who is interested of the organization, like target, or someone who is involved with an organization. Now, that's not totally wrong, because publics can be also stakeholders, but actually there is a substantial difference between these two terms. Open here and get here. One important difference is that while stakeholders are individual organizations that possess those attributes, those characteristics I mentioned, so they have something, some resources, some capacity, something that is of value, publics normally are individual groups who have some issue with organizations, who have some problems. And at some point in time, they recognize that that problem needs to be solved, cannot stay as such, and decide to organize and act upon. So activists often are publics for organizations. They don't have any economic contractual relationship. They might, if they are also consumer or customers of the company, but often they don't have any contractual economic relationship with the organization they are protesting, but they protest for a cause, an issue that for them is of value. And they see the organization, so the business there, responsible, if not in total, in part of that issue. And they activate themselves, they become vocal, they might take on some behavior, boycotting or protesting or something, to show that they disagree, that they have something about that. So the main difference between these two concepts is that stakeholders are often identified, or let's say, based on managerial discretions, basically on manager's opinion, who the organization thinks they are important, what resources they might offer. But publics actually arise spontaneously from the situation. If you want to visualize it, you can visualize it like that. Stakeholders are individual organizations that possess some resources or something that can affect the organization operation, whereas publics are broader group of individuals who might not affect, but at some point in time, they might seek the attention they claim. The very interesting thing is that sometimes publics want to move into the stake-seeking behavior that we discussed before, particularly if they think that that position would allow them, grant them access to organization, grant them a possibility to influence organization. And of course, there are a lot of studies and research that looks at the tactics and the things that these individuals, this group, this organization, this entity do to gain that status. Of course, publics themselves, they have different level of activism, let's put it like that. And there is quite a bit of research on this. This is just to summarize something you might read or have read about it. But not all of the publics are, let's say, equally active in claiming their right in protesting or doing something to organization. And there is a range from so-called not public, so those who might have an issue, but they are not aware of it, from those who become very active, so from top and down. if you later are interested to know more about that, we can give some readings background that. But this segmentations is based on basically on two criteria: the level of knowledge on the event, which by the way is a communication activity, awareness creation, and the involvement, how much they feel touched upon or interested about the issue itself. And based on this, there is these four typologies of publics. Any idea why we are talking about this typology of publics? Any thought? Very simplistic manner, not an academic manner. Would you do anything if you know that someone has an issue with you, but is not recognizing that there is a problem? Would you just go up front and say, I know, you know, there's this problem things and so on? Or would you just keep it quiet? So let's put it like that. Who will speak up, raise your hands, and who will be stay quiet if the, let's say, the person? You will speak up, huh? You will speak up. The rest will stay quiet. Okay, that is very interesting. So that is the situation of the non-public, essentially, that you know there is a problem, but the other is not recognizing that. Of course, we can be open and transparent, say, you know, there is this problem, let's face it. But most organizations will not do anything, like the majority of you, with the non-publics. They will only activate it to discuss and bring attention to the issues only when the person recognizes the problem. So only when the person either become latent or even more when they become aware of that. So this is actually an important thing, I would say, that we need to consider it, because it's not only about now, the example you mentioned is for friends maybe, but in business context, you don't want to be liable that someone sue you and take a additional responsibility or talk about things that are maybe be problematic unless someone is requesting you to do so. So that's why we need this classification to think through who we are talking to, what do they know, what issue they might have, how much we should talk about the things we need to talk about. Okay, I think before we get into now there are some examples and things related of these typologies of stakeholders and publics, we should take a little bit break in case you need to see, I don't know, visit a restroom or get a coffee or something. How much time, Matthias? 10 minutes? 8 to 10 minutes, okay. Shall we restart? Please take a seat. I don't know if someone is outside still for coffee. Right. Thank you. How are we doing? Are you following my conversations about stakeholder and publics? Yes? Okay, great. Now I want to move back to the very beginning. I told you the stories about Solness Corporation and how bad was Solness and how the employee Alice decided to tell the truth and gain her soul back. And that is also a concept that is widely researched, the Solness Corporation, in fact, and led to the idea of responsibilities. What responsibility do have organizations these days towards stakeholders, publics? This can be very, very complex these days. But let's say we could categorize this responsibility in two macro, let's say, groups of responsibility. Obviously, on the left side, you have those economic responsibility. And in fact, many of these might be obvious, obviously. If you deal with suppliers, you have a contract and you have to pay for the purchase. If you have employees, of course, you have a contract, a working contract, and you have to pay the wages and have follow of maybe pay also social security, insurance, and things like that. And then you have also an economic responsibility towards those who invest or put their money in your company, so the shareholders. A little bit more blur are the social responsibility. These actually have grown, massively grown in the last 20 years. So this is a table from Henry. You can have the reference if you want to read the whole article. He has listed some of the social responsibility that at that time were central also for these classical stakeholders, the ones you have mentioned, that are important to take in consideration, because even today when we think about of the financial sector, investor relation, a lot of shareholder or institutional investors actually are looking to invest in corporations that are sustainable, that they have strong responsibility towards the community, to the employees. So they look at these things before putting their money in. And I don't know if any of you is investing anything in bonds or stocks or anything, but there are also specific packages that you can buy, and you go in the bank and say, I want to all invest on very sustainable companies or companies that are not in a shady gray line business, like army or tobacco or other of those kinds. Now, the problematic we've seen is that that is not sufficient. And more and more organizations are, maybe sometimes they do because they see that fit with their corporate values, but they're starting to take particular initiatives, which are not economic, which are not business-oriented, but they are social, where they take stances here. This is just really much some examples that came to my mind. Maybe you have seen some of these. So some of the CEOs, Apple, Tim Cook, and Mark Benioff, have actually done quite vocally spoke about the right of LGBT. Okay, it's missing the plus, sorry, here. Plus rights. We have Microsoft and Zuckerberg also talking about or advocating for immigration. That is also one topic that, especially in the U.S., is always controversial. So you have those who are, let's say, more not necessarily welcoming, but let's say find the right of immigrants to move in the U.S. and those who would like to close the borders. And then we have some Finnish example of companies to have also taken stances on questions of gender pay gap or against hate speech and so on. Now, this is not economic things, bear in mind. Of course, if this kind of activism brings value to organization, it does it in another form, not in the tangible manner, but it goes through corporate reputation and the reputation that organization gain as a promoter of certain rights. So this activity is becoming more and more prevalent and more expected. I mean, we all think about a business organization not just there for producing the product we want to buy, but also to take a stance on certain things we care about it. This is also, let's say, a little bit complex environment, and that is related with the word polarization had in the title, is because some of these topics or social issues they embrace, they are also used in political terms to divide societies, to put those in favor against those who are against. For example, abortions is traditionally a topic that splits societies. You have some who are pro abortions and some who are against. So they use it also as a way also to split opinions, to create conflict, to create tensions, as we have seen it. Given the situation that some of the social issues are complex and can create polarization and can split society and making groups in conflict, you say, why are they actually doing? Why does they expose themselves to the risk or critique or risk or to have some, you know, negative effects on that if they take these stances? Well, that is a very complex answer because there are different kind of reasons why they do. Of course, if we look into more philosophical moral theory, we have explanation that goes ground into the moral duty of corporations that brings into this idea that corporations are part of a social system. And in a social system, everybody needs to collaborate or contribute because they can be affecting or affected by each other. So in order to maintain a well-functioning society, they need to take on these additional duties. But there can be also legal frameworks that requires that. I mean, environment is one of the things that in the last 10 years has been regulated and more regulated. First effort, of course, all company organizations need to disclose their impact to the environment, society, so the annual reports has become mandatory, at least in this part of the world, not all the part of the world. And that is a clear, let's say, consequences of government legislation. And so it's not anymore a choice, should I tell what I do or not do it, but it has to be done. And that is also the complexities there is that what they declare need to be proved today. So it's not only nice to write a nice annual report and say, we value the environment, we plan to reduce emissions by 3% or something like that. They have to prove it, they do it. And that's the tricky part on that side. So there might become a normative duty to do that. And then broadly, we have these actions of these stake seekers, of these publics that activated for this sort of behavior. This is a chart coming from McKinsey & Company, an agency. It's a couple of years old, but it's very much, today is not much different than what used to be like 3 years ago. And in this chart, you see, this is coming really from empirical data, what is the situation with some of the stakeholders on the left side, consumer, government, employees, investors, retailers, and what do they care? What expectation they have towards the businesses? The darker colors is very, very important. The light color, less important. You can see that for consumer, the authenticity and the having integrated experience remains quite important. But DEI, which stands for diversity, equality, inclusion, so this column here, has grown importance as well as sustainability. For employees, we have obviously the future of work, so the work conditions is quite still important there, but they also, like consumer, care about their corporate culture, the corporate policy on DEI, and how they're doing sustainability. And I don't know if some of you is already working or is looking for work or something, whether you actually look at also at the company, future company from a perspective, is a sustainable employer, is a good employer or not. But that's what this chart is telling us about the expectation. In terms of polarization and taking us issues, this is really recent, and more recent is a year ago we started this, but this is another example. How complex is the situation for corporation when there are also conflict around? They don't necessarily are causing by themselves. If you are a business organization and you're selling your product in these regions where there is obviously a conflict, in where society is polarized, divided, there is a complex things to do. And many organizations have to take stances on conflicts and decide, you know, should they support one side or the other? Should they stay neutral? In these specific examples, of course, many organizations should stay in because this is also a religious but also political and very long history of contention between Israel and Palestinians aside. But it's sometimes very difficult, and particularly some American U.S. companies have been in the storms because obviously maybe some of their relation title. Maybe some of their prominent managers or CEO have some background in other parts of the conflict. We have collected some data last years on another conflict, and this is part of a project I'm still working on the morality and responsibilities of business organization here in Finland. We collect data on what people think about corporation engagement with conflict mitigations in the context of the Russian-Ukrainian conflict, whether they would expect the company to stay neutral, continue doing the business with Russia, or take a stance and try to influence or mitigate the effects of the conflict. And you might guess what was the result, that obviously we had a very big gap between those who were supporting or found the moral duty of corporation to take a stance from the conflict versus those who said, you know, a business is just to do business and not to take care about geopolitical issues. So that says quite a lot of what is expecting for stakeholders. Now, of course, there are many, many kind of stakeholders and many kind of stake seekers, and we need to prioritize these. I have a few slides about this, but I think, Matthias, you mentioned you will go through this, so I will skip that. And I will move instead to the role of communication in this context, which is primarily intermediating, but also, let's say, a role of understanding. And I would like also to outline something. Silence communicates. So when you don't do anything, you stay silent, you are telling something already with your silence. There is actually quite interesting line of research about silence in organizational communication literature that discusses about what does it mean, when can strategically be used. But when we think about corporate communication, we think about, let's say metaphorically, at the human. So we are using our eyes to see, our ear to hear what's happening, our sense to feel the pulse, the sentiment, the situation. So we use the whole set of spectrum things to detect what's happening, to forecast what we might expect is happening, and then to, based on that, to think through what should we do it. And some of the things, of course, might be purely communication. For example, if there is a misunderstanding, we can address it through communication. But if the issue is bigger, it's not a misunderstanding, we might need to move into actions. So when we think about the role of communication in stakeholder management, in addressing stakeholder concern and the public's as well, we're really thinking about the classical ideas. What is communication? Basically informing, sharing, framing, advocating, persuading, engaging, discussing, and so forth. Framing is something we do very often. Have you discussed about framing or not yet? So framing is a very specific strategic communication activities where we're trying to offer an understanding of an issue, an event, a situation through a particular perspective, angle. So when we frame, we try to provide the pictures in all these dimensions, try to give a sense of meaning of what's happening, which is a little bit different than informing. The value chain element in stakeholder communication, in public communication, when we try to do this and create that kind of connection, is the value chain. Remember, at the beginning, I told you that this Freeman that came after Friedman, the name seems quite similar, but they are different. The father of stakeholder theory, he says that the value of business to create, the importance of business to create value to the stakeholders. And through communication, we can support the value creation, the value chain in these four elements. First of all, awareness. We might want at some point of time to increase the attention, the relevance of certain things to our stakeholder group, make them aware. Hey, there is these things going on. We want to increase understanding. Understanding is always the base to avoid conflict, to avoid polarization, to avoid or reduce polarization and things. So we try through communication to enable a better understanding. I think understanding is also a key of the concept of dialogue. I don't know if you have already encountered this word, dialogue, stakeholder dialogue, but that's central. Eventually, we want to increase acceptance. Acceptance is important. Acceptance doesn't mean agreement, because you can agree to disagree as far as you accept that another individual or another entity has an opinion on that. But acceptance is a very important idea because it's allowed us to move to the next step from awareness, understanding, and so on, to commitment. Commitment to do something, to believe in something, to support an organization, and so on. And that's where we want to move it through corporate communication. Sometimes commitment can be difficult, is unstable because stakeholders have different interests, different positions, so we might have different level there. But we have to find ways or try to find ways to mitigate these different complex understanding and ideas. I mentioned at the beginning that I'm part of this R2WH Page Society, and they do regularly do surveys and things on the major corporation and particularly focusing the chief communication officers. So this is coming from recent report. I think the report might not be available to outsiders, so I get this because I'm a member. But these are the things that the people working major corporation, especially in the communication area, are noticing as a driver of change, how organizations have changed, especially in the last year, what are the expectations, what things they need to be taken into consideration. Of course, the pandemic has been a major external phenomenon, critical phenomenon that's brought quite big changes in how organizations operate and also internally. The conflict I mentioned, there are many conflicts, by the way, around the world, not just the Middle East and here in Europe. There are many other conflicts. The role expectation of social issues from LGBT plus to DEI to equality to rights of groups and so things like that. Technology is obviously bringing some changes in how communication in large organizations is conceptualized and implemented. And of course, general skepticism, I would say, crisis of trust. These are the things they pointed as clearly important. You can see also how these things have evolved. In 4 years, they became quite from 68%, 80% as a very important in the decision-making of this organization. So the things that I showed you now, they are now more marginal. We are not talking more about economic responsibility of businesses. We're talking about the prevalence of social responsibility up to 80%. Few things also that this CCO I have mentioned in this report, the complexity of their role in organization. They are not just there for communications. They are there much more as a listener, as advisors, as those kind of individuals that can help the CEO and other senior organizational members to think thoroughly through at the implication of strategies, particularly in the area of transformation, technology, and ESG. ESG is another fancy word for sustainability, is environmental social governance, which is another term that become very popular these days. So they all noted that there is an expanded role of what they are supposed to do that is just behind communication. They all noted down that technology have a two side opportunities as well, risk in communications. Of course, so many leaders are using AI technologies for, let's say, do more effective communication, speeding up processes that maybe take longer time. But there are also some risks related with the use of technologies of that size. They are an important component of bringing on in corporate communication is the internal communication. Long time, internal communication was basically newsletters or things like that, send it to all employees of a company. But today is much more. It's much bigger role. The regular employees is not just hired to be doing its job. It's becoming also him or herself a component of the organizational success, which means also it's crucial their engagement in alignment with organization objectives and mission. And then the other important element is nothing is local anymore. Even a small company in Finland might be have repercussions, maybe messages on social media, other things in other side of the world. So that nothing is local, everything is global. Organization need to think about the impact of even local activities on a global scale. So these are the things that they noted that have repercussions. A final notes, and then I will wrap it up. Matthias here. When we want to think about stakeholder communication, publics, who they are, what they do, why they're important, what do they care, we obviously starting from listening, from monitoring. There are a lot of tools out there that allowed us to keep track on what's going on, the sentiment, the interest, and monitor there. But we have to be very careful also that monitoring is different than active listening and communication. We are all bombarded by survey feedbacks, but what's happening about these inputs that people give to organization and of different kind? Active listening requires that we really try to sit or, let's say, put the clothes of the other person, try to understand the situation, and try to really respond, evaluate, and respond whenever possible, or integrate that. Many of the crisis situation have a rumors background, or they are not really accidents, so-called crisis accident type, but they provide signals, things that we can see or sense if we are really listening in an attentive manner. Yes, so this is been about a little bit about the same thing. So when we think about communication, somehow we think about speaking for most of the time because communication about speaking, but actually communication should be also very much about listening as a starting point before communicating. And we can think about this process more as a way also to understanding the issue, identifying the problem, and also to support the communication, the so possible solution of the problem. Last but not least, you will be experiencing in this course, I think, and as well also in other courses in communication, these three macro understanding of corporate communication, the buffering idea, the bridging and advocating. So buffering when we essentially try to protect our image, protect our organization by denying the existence of an issue, by legitimize the stakeholder claims, for example. We can be advocating when we promote causes, when we speak about situation, or when we promote simply our products and services. And we can be facilitator with a bridging, trying to find a point of connections to build this dialogue and this common sharing. This is the way we, in a larger sense, we think about the strategic role of corporations, either buffering, bridging, or advocating. And I think I'm going to stop here so we get here some questions or curiosity from those in audience or those, I don't know, those in at home have a chat or can they interact, Matthias?
Do you have any questions in the audience for Kiara? This is your chance. There are no silly or stupid questions.
No, absolutely. That's the thing. Absolutely. And you will hear once you continue your study that we really like that question. We really like to hear what you're thinking and discussing. It's quite a basic thing, but of our way of thinking. And I like personally when students come and ask questions or things they want clarification, or maybe they bring in something to my attention that I haven't thought about that might activate the conversation. But yeah.
And if there are not any questions, I can obviously ask a couple of questions from you.
Yes, of course.
And I told Kiara I don't want to put her in a spotlight here with two difficult questions to answer, but maybe you've been talking about stakeholders in this lecture. So do you have any, you know, recent examples in terms of, you know, if there are any successful or unsuccessful, you know, communication situations with stakeholders? Is there anything specific that comes to your mind? It could be a crisis related or anything like that.
Well, I think that obviously the let's say bad examples are examples normally in crisis situation when organizations might follow, let's say they might take some response pattern or strategy to please a certain stakeholder and then alienate the others. Some years back, there was a situation with the NBA, the National Basketball Association, the US one, in China. The situation was actually raised by a political contention because at that time the coach made, X was called Twitter at that time, made a statement about the political situation between China and Hong Kong. You know, that is part of the dispute long time is an autonomous region, but as a tie with basically it's part of the Republic of China. And the people didn't like this political comment made on the situation there. So the first reaction was, of course, boycotting and not attending the matches, but also the national televisions resigns their contract for showing the matches with obviously the financial losses from the company side. And in this turmoil, the company starts trying the let's say the bridging, trying to apologize and say things that they didn't mean and that they value some important things about the Chinese culture. So they try to, let's say, bring a positive image on themselves. And what happened is that then the American stakeholder, American public fans start to say, hey, what are you doing? I mean, you're an American company. We value freedom. We value these things. And now you are basically saying things that you are contradicting your core values. And they started then protesting. So this is an example of not thinking globally, acting on the situation, trying to mitigate the conflict and with the communication that aligns with the stakeholder, the local stakeholders' values that create potential negative things on the other side. But I think some of the company also who take stances on some social issues like Filison, that's a Finnish company, has been quite positive feedback from their key stakeholders on these initiatives because majority of the population has, a liberal view also what are the rights of peoples and things like that. And so they see it as a very good commitment and important stance also following the United Nations sustainable goals. So those kind of communication that align with the, on one side, the corporate activities and values and what society is expecting normally are more successful.
And I think, you know, on those examples, there are a lot or a broad range of stakeholders involved.
Yes.
Within these situations. And obviously, if you are more interested about, let's say, crisis communication, I think we have a specific course for that if you will pursue with your corporate communication studies in the future. So you will find more examples and more ways of dealing with crisis situations in that course. I maybe have two questions for you to left. So, and I always have to ask this nowadays. So artificial intelligence, obviously. So what is your take on how does it change and impact, you know, corporate communication or, you know, let's say dealing with stakeholders, if we want to connect it to this lecture specifically, but what is your take on artificial intelligence and how does it?
So the artificial intelligence is a little bit like the evolution of technology. We got first very scared, oh, they're going to take out our job, especially because now these large language models are becoming better in formulating messages, in translating or creating content, which is one of the things that obviously in corporate communication, especially in the junior level, we tend to do, create content, right? But at this point in time, I think I don't see it as thing that undermine the professional corporate communication. Actually, I'm currently collecting data among Finnish leaders working communications and vice presidents here in Finland of large organizations. And we talk about also these things about, is AI really changing? I think what is changing is a change of way of thinking about the role of corporate communication from purely crafting messages to more strategizing and considering these broad issues that we are discussing now. For now, my experience with technology is that I don't trust them totally. They really hallucinate. They might create some text that looks like credible, but then when you start reading, is that really so? And then it's totally a mess up text or something. So there is a need of someone who understands also, you know, they can make things more effective, faster, and maybe help structuring things. But we are not yet to replace corporate communication. And I would say once you move on in a career, you are less about crafting messages and more about this broader advising. I mean, when I talk with these leaders, they say that 2/3 of the time is about coaching, is about mentoring, is about advising their colleagues, their teams, or the senior, talking about the impact on different things, how policy change organization. That's what they do on the higher level. And that's where probably we have to start to think, not just the basic messaging part.
And then last, but definitely not least, obviously you are head of our discipline. So why should a student choose corporate communication? You know, why should they pursue with their studies? Or if they're business school students, why should they choose this discipline as their major? So what is your...
Yeah. So the interesting part is that as I go do research as well and I interview people, it always turns out that even those that operate in other areas than communication come back at some point in time to want to learn about communication, because communication is also a way to be effective, is a way to make people be, supporting your strategies if you're a leader, is a way of informing and relating your area. Even in very core, let's say, classical terms like finance or economics, a lot of those managers need skills in communications, especially when they are not simply doing the calculation themselves. It's becoming central. Most of the leaders that I've been interviewing might have not started in corporate communication, but they end up and they had to do quite a bit of training afterwards. It's an interdisciplinary approach, and we think that why in a business school when in other countries or in other universities is more in humanities, it's because we want you guys to get also an understanding how organization operating. It's not about crafting, it's about really understanding who your colleagues in the other units, what they're doing, how all these pieces together, like a puzzle built, the governance and the strategy organization. That's where we operating in a business environment where you can get this kind of understanding and thinking through. So I would say Main reasons, whenever you're going to do, if you're not going to be a communicator yourself, you will be interacting with some communicators at some point because they will come to ask you information or things to share. And so a basic understanding of the other side is always good for this internal relation. And then if you are going to take on this as your path, you will be also better suited to learn, you know, the organizational environment, the business context, and the things that are important when we do handle this complexity.
And I think for the next lecture, we will have a great example on from one of our alumni, Ilya Aalto. He's going to have a lecture, and Ilya told me that even though he's not currently specifically working in a corporate communication profession, he said that 90 to 95% of his work is currently somehow related to communication anyhow. So obviously you will hear more about Ilya's experience and examples next week. So I mean, that's a great example to show that how it actually works in practice. I don't have any more questions to Chiara. I don't know if you have come across any more questions.
I guess also to reach out in other moments.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, if not, thank you, Chiara, for the lecture, and I'll see you guys next week.